Jamie Dye with you here on the Green Zone. As mentioned, no Locker today. Day-to-day upper body injury is on the injury report for the Green Zone today. But I hope everybody had a decent Thanksgiving, okay? I hope you spent some good time with your family and your friends and had a great meal and great leftovers. Because I know there's a few Blue Jay fans around the office who A little blue, to be quite honest, about how things went for the Blue Jays. Jamie Campbell's joining us of Blue Jays Central here on the Green Zone. Jamie, history is against them, but tell us why Blue Jay fans should still believe in this team.
Well, hello, first and foremost, Jamie. Thank goodness we're only talking about the results of a sporting event here.
Yes.
You know, there are worse things going on in the world than the Blue Jays in an 0-2 deficit heading to Seattle. And given that the Blue Jays over the course of the season were the champions of the comeback, perhaps, you know, a three-game sweep in Seattle is what's in store. And that's the greatest thing about this team. I have enjoyed this ride immensely, in part due to the fact that they are so unpredictable. And yes, they looked extraordinarily awful over two games at home, which was both stunning and sad all at the same time, especially after the first batter to the plate for the Blue Jays in the first game. George Springer hits a home run to give his team the lead, and then it was kind of downhill from there. What we've learned about this team is that there's a resilience there that we hope is flexed over the next 3 days, beginning tomorrow night. And as I've said to the people close to me who are as down as it appears some of the people around your studio are, imagine if they sweep all three in Seattle and come back for a Sunday nighter at the Rogers Center with a chance to win the series.
That'd be something. And I'm interested, Jamie, in your response to this, because I've had this question thrown at me today, and you're a lot more closer to the game to answer it than I, because a lot of people started watching the Blue Jays in September or late September, or maybe even game one against the Yankees, and of course, they're scoring runs and hitting homers, and they're going, what happened? So my answer has been, well, the Mariners pitching is just better than the Yankees pitching. But what do you put it to on explaining what happened from one series to the next on why things have gone completely 180 on the Blue Jays?
My answer is quite broad, but it really does illustrate what baseball historically is, and that is that when you play 162 games, the entirety of the season is like the ebb and flow of the waves on a lake, where you crest and have these incredible highs. In the case of the Blue Jays, that was, you know, a pair of double-digit win streaks. And then you hit these lows, which have come and gone over the course of the year at various times, most of those in the first two seasons. So it's understandable, or pardon me, most of those in the first 2 months of the season. So it's understandable that those people who tuned in late in the summer of 2025, because the word was this was an unstoppable team, only really know the highs, especially at the very end when they were faced with this necessity of winning the last four games of the year in order to finish in a tie with the Yankees and clinch the division. That's exactly what they did. They ended up sweeping Tampa Bay when they, as it turns out, absolutely had to, and then took a break for 3 or 4 days, welcomed the Yankees, and scored 23 runs in the first two games against them. And I think what that does is it gives you the sense that this is an unstoppable team. But the great thing about baseball is another unstoppable team rolls into town, and suddenly you're cast into the depths again where you can't hit, and we've seen that in the first two games. You can't pitch very well, and we've seen that mostly from the bullpen in the first two games. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is a baseball season encapsulated, and it's the best I can do to explain it. Why isn't Vladdy doing anything at the plate when he was 9-for-14 against the Yankees? I don't know, but that's baseball. Why isn't Alejandro Kirk doing anything at the plate? Why is it essentially everybody not named George Springer or maybe Nathan Lucas is doing anything at the plate? And again, that's baseball. It's been that way for well over a century. It will continue to be that way. And the best that you can hope for if you're a Blue Jays fan is tomorrow night, Shane Bieber goes out and dominates like he's capable. And the Blue Jays put 6 or 7 on the board early on in the game against George Kirby, and they start making it a series by winning one.
Jamie Campbell joining us, the Blue Jays Central here on the Green Zone as the Jays down 2-0, heading to Seattle. They're already working out in Seattle ahead of tomorrow's game number 3. Jamie, okay, a few years ago, the Kinsmen dinner in Saskatoon, a great night out. Buck Martinez was talking to Jose Barrios about an early pull by John Schneider in the playoff game that Buck disagreed with. Do you think we're having the same conversation with Kevin Gausman in a year or two in Saskatoon over the winter?
I don't believe it will be as a profound discussion. As you may recall, that situation that developed in Minnesota was fascinating because it went against the grain of what the team did most of the year. Having Yusei Kikuchi come out of the bullpen was just something they had not done during the entirety of the regular season. And I think what made it worse was, one, again, there was a series where the Blue Jays, like we've seen the last two against Seattle, couldn't score against Minnesota anyway. So, you know, the pitching decision really didn't matter much in the end. When a team can't score, there's not much you could do. But I also know that none of the players on that team, beyond Kikuchi, Barrios, and pitching coach Pete Walker, were aware of this plan. And I think that rubbed players the wrong way. So everything they do now is communicated to everybody in the clubhouse. I don't believe that the Kevin Gausman poll is going to resonate quite as deeply as that game in Minneapolis did, simply because, yet again, it didn't really impact the outcome of the game because the Jays couldn't score anyway. You know, they got the leadoff home run from Springer. They got a base hit from Santander in the second inning. And then they had nothing the rest of the way. So you can bellyache all you want about pitching decisions, but if you're going to score one run on two hits, you're not going to win. And that was easily the case there.
Jamie Campbell with us here on the Green Zone. Okay, I've been, we do this day in sports history here on the Green Zone earlier in the show. Some good Blue Jays mojo here on October the 14th. See if Jamie Campbell remember when moments.
I know where you're going here.
Well, there's two. Let's start in 92. The first time the Jays get to the World Series, October the 14th in 1992, with Candy Maldonado hauling in the fly ball to end it. Jamie, do you remember where you were in 92?
I do. Game 3?
In the ALCS for the they would have been the ALCS when they clinched the pennant.
The World Series or the American League Championship?
The American League Championship when they clinched the pennant for the first time in October 14th.
I don't exactly know where I was. It's funny, Candy Maldonado hit the game-winning sacrifice fly in the first World Series game played
in Toronto,
in Canada, outside of the United States. And you might recall, and I'm sorry to tap dance around what happened in the ALCS that year, but you may recall that was the game where Devon White made a spectacular catch in center field, and ultimately Kelly Gruber applied a tag to the heel of Deion Sanders, which should have been the first triple play in World Series history, but they didn't have review back then, so it was never overturned. And the favorite part for me is that I bought a scalper ticket that day for $175, which put me first row, far right-hand side of the Atlanta bullpen, which if you widen out the photograph of Devon White doing his faceplant in center field, you could probably see me sitting there front row right on the edge. I was as close to Devon White as any human being when he made that catch. It was one of the best $175 I ever spent. So there's my reflection of 1992. I thought you were going to, I think this is the anniversary of Jose Bautista.
Happy, I was going to go there. Happy 10th anniversary. 10 years ago today, the bat flip game also happened on October the 14th in Toronto. Take us back to that moment, Jamie, as it played out in dramatic fashion with the controversy in the top half and everything that happened until Jose knocked it out of the park and almost threw that bat to the top of the CN Tower.
I will admit I am too busy at this moment to write a book, but once I A, retire, or B, Sportsnet fires me, I'm going to think about writing a book that's entirely devoted to that seventh inning, which was absolute baseball theater for anybody that saw it. And what's fascinating is we have a very young audience. In some cases, we're too young to remember the details of it, but it sort of began with Russ Martin throwing the ball back to Aaron Sanchez and accidentally hitting the extended bat of Shin-Soo Choo, which what we didn't know at the time and what the umpiring crew didn't realize at the time was a live ball. So when Rougned Odor scampered home to score the go-ahead run and make it 3-2 for Texas, most of the people in the building didn't realize that it was a legitimate play, and their reaction to it spoke volumes. It was an angry place at that time. But to watch Texas kick the ball around, notably Elvis Andrus in the bottom of the inning, and then have a one-time Blue Jay, Sam Dyson, come out of the bullpen to have to deal with Jose Bautista and throw him a sinker in that Bautista demolished to left field, was just one of the, oh my goodness, one of the greatest 48 minutes, I think it was 48 minutes in length, that entire inning. And it's one of the very few times that I felt like that building moved. I'd love to feel that again. And, you know, maybe that comes next weekend if the Blue Jays can do some incredible work in Seattle. But that is one of those memories that I will take to my grave.
What a moment in Blue Jays history, as we're reliving a lot of them right now with all those 92 and 93 playoff runs and 2015 and 2016, the Encarnacion walk-off. Of course, in the ALDS happened.
You know, I remember so vividly that once the Jays had eliminated Texas and won that game, we were still broadcasting the fifth game of the series between Kansas City and Houston, but it wasn't starting for 2 hours. So I recall that there was a, what we call in the industry, a fill show from the end of the Blue Jays and Rangers to the start of Kansas City and Houston, 2 hours long, most of it filled with, you know, champagne showers in the clubhouse and Barry Davis and Hazel May getting soaked. But 2.7 million people watched the entirety of that postgame show, which was presented to me about 2 days later. And I just thought, wow, that tells you everything you need to know about how many people in this country, not just in Toronto, not just in what we call the GTA, but in this country, seem to love this baseball team. If I didn't know it then, I know it now.
Well, Jamie, I look forward to the book. Hopefully not for too much, like in a long time from now, right? Yeah, exactly.
Jamie,
so
right?
In a long time from now, I can't wait for that book on the seventh inning. Thanks for your time today, and hopefully maybe another book can be written about this comeback for the Blue Jays against the Mariners. Jamie, thanks so much for your time.
Ooh, I'd like to author that one first. Thank you, Jamie. Nice to speak with you.
That is Jamie Campbell from Blue Jays Central here on the Green Zone, as the Jays are now up against it. Only three teams have lost the first two games at home and have come back to win a best of seven in the Major League Baseball playoffs. Do you think the Jays can get it done? Let us know here on the Green Zone on 980 CJME and 650 CKOM.
Because I'm happy.
Well, congratulations to the Regina Thunder of the Prairie Football Conference. They locked up first place. The playoffs begin this weekend. The Thunder, of course, will be at home, as will the Saskatoon Hilltops, as things are lining up just for another Thunder Hilltops PFC championship game. The Thunder game was a bit of a mess because that was the snowstorm that kind of hit the Regina area. The quarterback of the Thunder only completed three passes because they didn't throw much because they didn't have to. They ran for 600 yards rushing. Two players had 200 yards rushing. Their offensive lineman even scored a rushing touchdown officially in that football game from 11 yards out. So they were using their feet to get a big win over the weekend, clinching first place. So the Thunder and the Hilltops both on home field for the first round of the playoffs. And, of course, high school football playoffs are beginning with the provincial championships coming up in a couple of weeks. So good luck to all those football players out there around Saskatchewan. And, of course, the Rams and the Huskies having great seasons as well.
Brothers and sisters, from the A's of the Aaron to the F's of that Jared Goff, the passes and the failures, oh, the failures! Brothers and sisters, the good and the wretched and the touchdowns, this is Jamie and Locke's Sunday School.
Yes, each and every week, here in the Green Zone, after a weekend of NFL football, we give you our top grades and our failing grades in the National Football League. And as I mentioned, Locker is out. We're on the injury report, upper body injury day to day. He's did not participate today here on the Green Zone on our injury report. Britton Gray filling in after what? How many screens did you have on Sunday watching the National Football League?
Just the NFL, or are we including baseball in that?
Well, baseball in there as well.
I have three.
Three?
One on Red Zone, one on any other game that's going on, and of course, the baseball game.
Yeah.
That's how you do it.
That's
nowadays.
Amazing. That is. How do you keep it together in your head on what is going on in each and every game?
That,
how do you do it?
Is something that science will need to figure out eventually. Brain works.
Can't wait on any medical students out there. Britton is volunteering to be an experiment on how his brain works. But let's start with our failing grades here on the Green Zone. I am failing the Kansas City Chiefs for the brawl against the Detroit Lions.
Branch walking by. Mahomes extends the hand to him. Branch doesn't respond, doesn't put his hand out. Pat on the back. Juju Smith-Schuster saw that. And then Branch and Juju continue to pass by, and he gives Juju a shot, who goes down. And that's where the whole thing began.
It was a gong show at the end of the game, but you're probably going, wait, it was the Detroit Lion guy. Brian Branch, he got suspended one game. Why are you chumping the Kansas City Chiefs? I'm chumping the Kansas City Chiefs, Britton, because there's no way, no how, anybody on that team should have allowed Patrick Mahomes to be in the bottom of that pile. Hold the man back. He's your quarterback. If he's down, you're done. I couldn't believe it. I'm like, someone grab Patrick Mahomes and get him out of there. They eventually did when he was already on the ground, potentially being trampled on in the chaos. Got to protect your quarterback at all times. And also, failing grade for Travis Kelce. Really, Trav? Like, really? He was standing way at the back, just pondering life, had no interest at all in protecting a teammate. I think she should change the lyrics to Wood. That's all I'm saying. Britton, what's your failing grade?
The Dallas Cowboys defense.
Empty set, five in the pattern. Young floats it, end zone. McMillan, his first NFL touchdown. Steps up, throws. Wide open man is Dowdle. And he's going to take it to the end zone. Young, under pressure, steps away, fires, scores, touchdown.
It's just, I don't know. Dak Prescott's going to be an MVP this year with the numbers he has, especially when CeeDee Lamb is out, and they have the worst defense I've ever seen. Congratulations. Rico Dowdle didn't have 200 yards. He had 185 or whatever he was at. Scored touchdowns. They only need a field goal to win, and the Dallas Cowboys defense elected to do the old. Go score a touchdown. The pro guy from 25 yards out isn't just running into the end zone. He's going down to kick the game-winning field goal. Matt Eberflus needs to be fired into the sun already. Get him out of the National Football League. It's terrible.
There is a worst defense in the National Football League, Britton. There is one that's worse. The Baltimore Ravens do have a worse defense. The Cincinnati Bengals are close. So they're not the worst in points allowed, but they're pretty bad.
Those other defenses aren't making my eye twitch on the daily basis because I have to watch no one play defense.
Okay, let's get to our top grades. My top grade for this week in the National Football League, I'm going to give it to some sophomore quarterbacks.
Caleb takes it, gets a block from Swift, and is in for the touchdown. Daniels protected, looking downfield, flag on the play, and Lane with a catch.
Nick's wide open, touchdown, Nate Atkins.
Fake handoff to Stevenson, May feeling the pressure.
Got taking a shot, he's got his man, it's Pop Douglas, and he is in, touchdown.
Yes, sophomore quarterbacks went 3-1, and the reason that, 3-2 if you put Spencer Rattler in there, 3-1, but Caleb Williams beat Jaden Daniels, of course, last night in that one. But I'm looking at Drake May, 4-2 for the Patriots. When you look at Bo Nix, 4-2 for the Denver Broncos. Caleb Williams, he's got the Bears playing well. They've won three straight games, and the Commanders, after the loss, they are 3-3, but they are outscoring their opponents, and I think the Commanders will have a strong back half of the season. I like seeing these new young guys. They're all exciting, right, Britton?
Like, absolutely.
Bo Nix, Drake May, Jaden Daniels, these are guys you want to watch play on Sundays.
Sneaky athleticism from guys like Drake May and Caleb Williams, right? They can run the ball, football.
So I'm giving the top grade to some sophomore quarterbacks in year two in the National Football League. Britton, who gets your top grade?
Ben Johnson and the Chicago Bears.
Snap a bit high. Kick is good. And the Bears win it. Jake Moody, a hero tonight.
Because the Chicago Bears, as a franchise, they've been terrible. They're the team that has the fumble at a minute 20 left to lose the game. They're the team that commits the penalties late that loses them game. The doinks off the field goal post. They're that team. That didn't happen. We talk about Corey Mason, what he's done here. Ben Johnson, I think, is really changing the culture in Chicago to more winning. They're not making those crucial mistakes at those times. They can come back to win. Caleb Williams is playing some of his best football so far. It's looking bright for a franchise that, much like the Jets, they're in there. The Titans, they make mistakes at bad times. They didn't last night, and they got the win with Jake Moody, who was there for a day.
Another game-winning field goal by a kicker who was there for a day, like Matt Prater was with the Buffalo Bills earlier this season. There's our top grades and our failing grades here on the Green Zone of the National Football League. What are your top grades and failing grades? Maybe it's the NFL, or maybe it's the Saskatchewan Roughriders from Friday night. You want to hand out some grades, you can do so as well at 1-877-332-8255.
Or maybe it's MVP Baker Mayfield.
By the way, the top two teams in the National Football League, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and the Indianapolis Colts, at 4-1, followed closely by the 4-1 Pittsburgh Steelers and Aaron Rodgers. Don't I have something on the board about Aaron Rodgers?
Doesn't look like it. We can add something. No. Oh, it's down there, way down there.
I have to buy an Aaron Rodgers jersey if he wins the Super Bowl. That's what it was.
Can it be a Jets jersey? It'd be much funnier if it was an Aaron Rodgers Jets jersey. Be cheaper for you.
Can it be a Packers jersey?
That's good? Too fun.
Oh, okay. Fine. Why do I say things on the radio? Jamie and Britton with you here on the Green Zone. What are your grades? Top grades and failing grades. But coming up, of course, we will talk about the news in Rider Nation today. Rough Rider fans, how you feeling? Jeremy O'Day, Corey Mace locked up 2 more years. with extensions through the 2028 season. Although the next big question is, who's going to be their quarterback? This is 980 CJME and 650 CKO. Some Rider news today, as the Rough Riders have locked up their general manager and head coach for two more years. Jeremy O'Day and Corey Mace announced two extensions earlier and addressed to reporters after practice.
The people of Saskatchewan have been nothing but plush to our family. Even, you know, yesterday, you know, my boy Chewy out there at his first, you know, hockey practice, and, you know, all the neighbors and stuff helping to this guy. I know nothing about hockey and just getting us all geared up. And I mean, everybody's just been first class here, and it feels like an extended family. And that's big for us.
And Corey also talked about the relationship he has with the general manager.
You kind of get vibes from people out the gate. Without having a relationship before taking this job with J.O., from the interview process and instantly as soon as we got here, things have clicked. Very easy, you know. So our working relationship is excellent. Our friendship is excellent. You know, it's awesome, man.
For the general manager, Jeremy O'Day, no-brainer for him to lock on for two more years.
Been here for quite some time, and you know, my whole family's raised here, and it's pretty special for me to be able to receive the extension. Like I said, I'm just, you know, truly honored to continue to represent the team.
And of course, the general manager talks about the man he hired 2 years ago, and it's been a successful relationship with back-to-back trips to the West Final.
I mean, it started with the conversation when we were interviewing head coaches for the job here, and started with, you know, just a conversation over the phone, and after the conversation, you wanted to talk to him more, and then it led to a FaceTime Zoom call with him, and then the interview in person, and he's the exact same person from the first call.
So Jeremy O'Day, Corey Mace locked in for two more years. But of course, the football world never stops spinning for a moment. There's other things that need to be on the go for an organization. Who's your general manager? Who's your head coach? And who's your quarterback? That's the next question. I've already written a commentary. You can find it at cjme.com, cklm.com. I wrote it a few weeks ago. Is there another option other than Trevor Harris for 2026? Name me somebody. After the year he's put together with the Saskatchewan Rough Riders. Yes, there's a little bit of a shoulder and an arm issue midseason, but it's been a relatively healthy year for Trevor Harris. And he has led this team to 11 victories. Jake Mayer had one. They're 12-4. That's a heck of a record. That's a heck of a leader in Trevor Harris. If he wants to play next season, why wouldn't you sign him to a one-year extension? But Kyle, I was on who's going to be the quarterback. Kyle, Curtis Rourke's going to be the quarterback in 2028. Yes, they did draft Curtis Rourke in the CFL draft, took a flyer. He got drafted in the National Football League. He's out rehabbing his knee injury with the San Francisco 49ers that he suffered in his final year of university. That is going to be a year or two away. 2027, I imagine, at the earliest for Curtis Rourke, if he doesn't stick in the National Football League. Or is it Jack Cohn? Or is it Jake Mayer? But it was a no-brainer to sign Jeremy O'Day and Corey Mace. And if you don't have another quarterback on the go, I also think it's a no-brainer to give Trevor Harris one more spin in 2026.